These epic tales of the great masters, and we're in the repeating cycle of the life of Jesus, the Christmas, Palm Sunday, Holy Week, Good Friday, Easter, which is really when we're intensely involved with the life of Jesus. And this story has been told and retold and acted out and spoken about and written about for literally hundreds and hundreds of years at this point. And yet there's something, even though we know what's coming, there's something about it that magnetizes us every time. Swami Kriyananda would tell us the stories of Yogananda's life, and then later on, Yogananda himself had said in a previous incarnation he was Arjuna, and he was the warrior king whose charioteer was Krishna. He said Yogananda also had an incarnation as William the Conqueror, the man who went from France to England and then set up the whole system of government that was England that gradually then became America. Swami said that also, Master said, he was the King of Spain at a certain point when Christianity was being threatened by the invasion of the Moors. And he, as Alfonso, do I get that right? Ferdinand the Wise, the saint is what he was. Ferdinand, he drove the Moors out of Spain in order to hold it as a Christian country. And in several of those incarnations, Kriyananda was his son, spiritual son in this life, actual physical son in both of those kings, and carried out the same mission afterwards. It's a very interesting thing to me that Swami Kriyananda was Alfonso X, that's right, the son of Ferdinand in Spain. When the Spanish came to and took over a great deal of the area that was the southwest, as Alfonso X, Kriyananda, had taken the principles that his father Ferdinand had put forward, and he'd created a system of law, which is exactly what he did in England also, when he was Henry I, as the son of William. William set the tone, and then Henry, Alfonso, Kriyananda brought it all down into something that we could use. So when the Spanish came to the southwest, they brought that system of law. And for a long time, the Spanish ruled vast areas of what later became the United States. When it gradually became the United States, many of those principles of law, first, the Declaration of Independence was based on what had happened, a lot of what Henry did in England. The laws of the Southwest were adopted by the United States of America. There are, I believe, 32 portraits in the House of Representatives now of the U.S., and one of them is Alfonso X. Because his influence like that, when I was sort of thinking of all of that, and Swami Kriyananda at one point also, I didn't actually believe that. I had to search that one out about four times before I really finally accepted it. And there's a really, it's a beautiful portrait, and it has a certain resemblance and profile to Kriyananda's profile. A handsome man with a slightly unusual look to him. When I was talking, when Swami Kriyananda has talked on several occasions about how America was the only place where Ananda could ever have gotten started. And going back a step, Master was born in India, but he came all the way to America, to Los Angeles, California, in order to launch this movement of self-realization, which Master said, in time, will have as much influence as Christianity does now, that the religion of the rising age is not Ananda or self-realization fellowship, but the principle of self-realization. You know, just as with Henry, the rule of law became a very important innovation in how society was organized. I realized that recently when there has been a certain chaos in being able to depend with all the immigration shifts and so on. It was an interesting thought for me to realize that if you can't depend on the rule of law, then the individual is always threatened. What gives us our individual security is that we know that the rules will always be there and they'll be more or less equally applied. Once you take that out, then all of a sudden everyone is subject to arbitrary rules and you never know where they're coming from. Well, people living without an awareness of the law of karma or an understanding of our own relationship to a greater reality, we feel frightened and uncertain because we think we're not living in the rule of law. And that's what life feels like to us a lot, doesn't it? We don't know where the next blow is coming from. We don't know whether society is going to remain stable or unstable. We don't always get what we want in a thousand ways. Your wonderful company is bought by someone else, and then all of a sudden you're made redundant and your secure world is changed. A woman friend of mine who worked 30 years in some company and had just really, they'd really developed a team that they worked with, and then a new boss comes in who was of a totally different generation and a totally different culture, and all of a sudden that which was so secure, it's gone. And we live and we think that it's all random. And after we suffer enough through that experience and the terror of living in a totally arbitrary world, whether it's an external society or the karmic cycle of life after life, it becomes unbearable. It either becomes anguishingly monotonous, as Yogananda said, or it just becomes simply and totally terrifying. And when we're pushed hard enough and we suffer enough, and this has to happen through many lifetimes, disappointments, lack of fulfillments, whatever it might be, gradually we're forced to think deeper and deeper. It's just the way the game is played. Whether we like it or not, we can have lots of objections. Yogananda himself, he said, he had an argument with the Divine Mother. I love the way he put that. He said, "Why must you always teach your children through suffering?" But, in fact, that does seem to be the way it works. Through suffering, through sadness, we're finally forced to think more deeply. And what we discover when we're willing to think deeply enough is that this world is not arbitrary at all. But that's a very, very, very hard lesson to take, because that means that somehow not only can we influence our own destiny, but we are in some way responsible for our own destiny. And first that becomes a kind of ego power. And we realize that there are all these different forces that we can put into play. And that's a little bit where we are now, where everybody's learning the secret of having it all and making money and getting what you want. And it's really impressive to watch it play itself out. Except the force that is ourselves, that is the master of our destiny, is not this limited egoic self that we're identifying with. And we run that story too. We push, we get what we want over and over and over again. We learn from being disappointed, and then we learn from succeeding. We get what we want over and over and over again, and then there's some part of us that still just runs up against the edge of this terrible limitation. And it's the limitation of our own consciousness. It's the limitation that's just interrupted by death, or by sickness, or by accident, or by other people simply refusing to fall in with our plans, whatever it might be. And then that crack begins to come, and the words are very simple. We realize that we are part of a greater reality. That's the phrase that Swami puts into the Festival of Light. We are part, let us celebrate the fact that we are part of a greater reality. And that's when true wisdom begins to come into us. We begin to understand that it isn't just what this limited part that I call myself wants. It's what the part of me that is connected to the greater reality, that's what I'm really seeking. And time again, even though we feel like we're in a cycle that we don't even know where it comes from, we gradually begin to understand that the masters, Swamiji, the masters are the ones who are really in charge. In the last chapters, one of the last chapters of Swami Kriyananda's book, The New Path, he writes so beautifully. It's either called His Last Days or something close to that. It's about Paramahansa Yogananda's, the very end of this incarnation. But Swamiji has a few paragraphs in there, a few pages, where he writes about this great cosmic force of history. and how these masters move through time and space. I mean, the little period of one birth and one death in the journey of the soul, it just is so enormous to us and so small compared to everything else. These masters move through time and space like that, like this, and gradually this very powerful awakening process happens. All of us can look at just at the incarnation we've been in, whether you've been awakened to this greater reality for a month or for 50 years of this lifetime. We watch how it's not like a sprint. It's not like the door opens and we just chase that rabbit to the end and that's the prize. It's more like we gradually, the tide comes in, or the balloon expands, or the tree grows. Any image that is just little by little, we begin to understand. I was talking to some friends of mine who are less chronologically developed than I am. And we were discussing some very subtle points on the spiritual path, and it was both pleasing and terrifying to them, the extent to which I was still just figuring it out. They were hoping that I had it all sewed up by now. Absolutely not. In fact, the more you expand in your awareness, the more you realize how subtle all of this is that you're working with. And all those neat little categories of the way it all fit, they all just fall to pieces. I listened to Swamiji for so many years, and for many of the years, I had to reject certain things. Let me phrase it differently. I just didn't know how to relate to certain things he said, because I kept wanting it to go into a neat box. And he was always telling me that it didn't. And I just didn't want to know that. I wanted it to be different. I just really wanted it to be different. So what happens is the masters just keep moving through this. And they have a job to do that is most fascinatingly internal and external. Internally, they're simply radiating this power of divine certainty. So that as we, and it all happens on very subtle planes, as our consciousness wanders around looking for answers, there's this pulse vibrating. And the way Swamiji writes about it, he talks about the master himself reincarnates many times. I just listed some of Yogananda and Kriyananda's incarnations, and all of us who have any association with these masters have moved in and out. And Jesus is part of this same lineage. The life of Christ, we must have been part of all of that too. Excuse me for a moment. We must have been part of that incarnation too. And Jesus, the lost years of Jesus were spent in India. Jesus had 18 years of ministry in India. He only had 3 in what we understand in the Jerusalem Holy Land area. But for 18 years, he also lived in India. He went back to meet the masters. This is becoming almost recognized historical fact now. He went to Benares. He went to the town of Puri, where there's a very famous old Jagannath temple, which is exceedingly conservative. And Jesus apparently caused a lot of trouble to those priests too. Yeah, I love that. The Jagannath temple to this day won't let non-Hindus in. When our pilgrimage group went there in the first time, our guide, who was a very modern Indian, is a very modern Indian, he's a very global citizen Indian, he just couldn't believe that they wouldn't let our pilgrimage group into that temple, because he thought we were far better Hindus than any Hindu he'd met in the sense of our true devotion. So he decided, being an aggressive young man, that he would speak to the board there and he would explain it to him. So one day he left our group and he went off and talked to those priests. He came back to us and he said, and this man had a lot of willpower. He came back, he said, never, never in 1,000 years are they going to let you in that temple. It was just absolute stone wall. And apparently it was the same in the time of Jesus, because he also argued with them. caused them a lot of trouble. Maybe that's why he had to go back to the Holy Land. I'm not really sure. But it was part of what he was doing, because they work on two levels. They work on the level of just radiating in the divine, and so that our soul will find, as I was starting to say, as Swami's writing in that book, how the masters return and return, and they gradually attract to them a family of disciples. And Swami writes how, and the disciples first have the power to gradually develop the power to see where they belong, and then the willpower to hold to it against the forces that try to stop them, and then gradually to gather inner realization and to be able to hold on to that realization. And Swami, and thus it's a very interesting cycle. I belong here and then I spin off. I belong here, but I can't quite remember why. It's just all of these things, it comes in a very, like from the sapling to the oak tree, just, you know, inch by inch, line by line. But then Swami writes one of the most reassuring things he's ever said. He said, these great families of self-realization, he says, this is really the global government. He said, not the people who are elected, who are born and die, who set up their big kingdoms and, you know, kill somebody to get their position and then are killed when someone takes it away, or win it appropriately and then have a wonderful period of time and then they're taken away. It just goes on and on and on and on. When Henry, after his rule, which was, I believe, 30 years in England, of the most peaceful time England had ever known, his legitimate heir, he had one legitimate son, and he was drowned. And so the succession was confused, and there was like 18 or 20 years of civil war and chaos. It's like you get it all in order, and who knows why his one heir is drowned in this. Well, actually what happened was the White Ship disaster, crossing from England to France repeatedly as they did. All the court had gone to France and they were going back to England, and all the young people got on one boat and all their parents and their older generation got on the other boat. The young boat, they started drinking wine. They gave wine to the crew. The crew got drunk. They hit a rock and the entire generation virtually was drowned. You know, like, why? But the masters tell us, and then what happened was, 20 years later, a legitimate heir got on the throne and then resurrected a great deal of what William and Henry had created. External, internal, but the force of what William did, the force of what Henry did, comes over, makes the United States. Alfonso makes the laws of this country. We live by those laws. America, the Dwapara Yuga country, no caste, no class, you know, no, I mean, yes, we have our weaknesses, but the system itself, we hold these truths to be self-evident. All men are created equal. All men have equal rights. And so into this soil, Master could drop this revolutionary teaching. We are all children of God and by our own efforts. And here is the key: meditate, Kriya Yoga, discipleship. You can realize God. Anyone can realize God. Master said he loves America. He said in India, they've been at it for so long. You talk to them about God realization and they say, yes, someday, some incarnation in the future, but for now my karma is so hard and what can I do? And he said, he comes to America and he says, you can realize God. The Americans just say, sure, we can do it, you know, because we just have that. But it's built into us, isn't it? We have no history. We can't just say, this is the city where Michelangelo painted the Sistine Chapel and there by extension I too am important. You know, this is the city where cows grazed. You know, we have nothing. We have only who we are. And where to, and this reality that we can all do it. And then we have to work together to do it. Because without that spirit, nothing could happen. I mean, it's such a mysterious thing. Now I'm going to finally get back to Palm Sunday, which I insisted she read about. But it was such a The story of Jesus is exactly the same story, especially when you add in all the more esoteric sides of it that are now known. There were Essene communities. There was a true expression of Judaism, and there was a totally corrupt expression of Judaism. The true expression of Judaism, which is a very, very ancient true religion, like everything else. When Jesus started Christianity, there was no Vatican. There was no humongous building in Rome, right? He was just walking around with a few of his disciples. That was the beginning. Now, what Jesus did true Christianity, or is the Vatican true Christianity? I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say that they're at least sincere, but it sure didn't start that way, did it? When Moses received the Ten Commandments on the burning bush and took those poor slaves out of Egypt and finally got them, you know, to the, where they could be free and begin to live their own life. And then there is this temple in Jerusalem, which I think makes the Vatican look small. I mean, it's humongous. I visited there for the first time a little over a year ago. I mean, all I could think of, that mostly it's not there anymore, although they have models of it, but they just had one gigantic wall, which, I mean, it's, you know, it's just, it's really big, and it's really heavy, and it's really immovable, and it really has nothing to do with self-realization. And I could say, wow, this story has been going on a really long time. So Jesus's whole, his Jerusalem was not his mission. Jerusalem is where they killed him. And his mission, he was out at the Sea of Galilee. He was in the small town of Capernaum. He was gathering people with him. When you hear the oratorio, which next Saturday, we're all going to sing together. We talk about the freedom and the joy. And it was all held in this small community of the Essenes. They remembered what Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. They remembered what it meant. It meant that he is within us and there is only one reality, and that is divine. And they prayed to be able to bring that truth back again. And Jesus was born to that community. And he was born for those who had ears to hear. And then he had to play out this drama. And this drama was to hurl himself again and again against that huge stone wall of the power and the money and the worldly influence that those priests had, and they were not about to give it up. That's the Pharisees arguing with Jesus. And Jesus looks like nothing, except he had the power. He had the power of the divine within him, because worldly power rises and falls, rises and falls, rises and falls, rises and falls. That temple in Jerusalem is just a huge, admittedly huge, but just one retaining wall. That's all that's left. It's all gone. The power of Jesus is as powerful in this moment as it has ever been. That's the eternal power. One rises, one falls. And Jesus gathered that power, and he brought it to that time and place, because a prayer of love went up from earth and God responded. And what he planted was in the hearts of his disciples. And power and worldliness and materialism, it's the battle of Kurukshetra. All of these epics come together. The battle of Kurukshetra, the power of material force against the power of spiritual force. And they're always in conflict. Because despite what everyone tells you, you cannot have it all. You know, you cannot indulge your separateness from the infinite and simultaneously experience your sameness with the infinite. It's one or the other. So Jesus had this drama that he had to act out because it was way deep in Kali Yuga and it needed to be really dramatic. So the time came, and this is the Sunday he did it. He deliberately just took himself and all his people right into the mouth of the lion. And who knew? They thought, this is our moment. This is when the walls of Jericho are going to come tumbling down. And I don't know, they thought maybe they'd take over the temple. Who knew? And there was this wave, which is what Palm Sunday is. Everyone is shouting and singing, and then they see who he is. And the Pharisees see who he is. The whole world is running after him. But the climax of the story is not ever that the world, meaning that the material world, sort of bows down to the spiritual. It's always that the spiritual transcends the material. And it doesn't transcend it usually easily, because there has to be a breaking apart. And that breaking apart, it's not about the world breaking apart. It's about ourselves. It's which side, when it's like this, which side will we choose? The disciples of Jesus had an incredible, we had an incredible experience that time. You know, knowing who he was, believing in what he was going to do, and then having it absolutely smashed in front of us. You know, arrested, tortured, crucified. And then resurrected. Just realizing that the forces of the material world come and go and come and go and come and go. But this is not a random universe. There is a divine law, and that divine law always operates. And that is, seek ye first the kingdom of God. Hold that power within you, and no matter what it seems, the power of light will always win. God bless you.